There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast
on the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
I'm gonna blow my
dude. I literally
out.
Went home and that inspired me, and I got a room on the Jersey Shore for one night on Saturday.
That's great. Some reason my head is putting two songs, like it just starts with Shore House and then ends with. But I got a lot of money because I just got paid.
I hate that shit. It drives me crazy.
It's like these two songs are fucking mashed together. And my fucking brain doesn't know what to do with it.
It's a mashup.
What is that? That's not a mashup.
That's a mashup.
That's kind of a mashup.
I got him back kind into this. I pulled him back down into the shit.
Yeah.
How many is a few?
Three.
We can't start like this.
Couple, few, several, many. Two, three, four, five.
We can't do
what
this.
Some?
Some is like 6 to 9.
Okay.
I thought a handful is what happens when you... I'm not even going to do this, Eddie. I can't even...
I don't know how to joke today, okay? This is a very serious topic. I do think it's interesting.
Yeah.
A handful is definitively five.
Because it's five fingers, yes.
Yeah.
That's how I also
say. It has to be, yeah.
Several is seven.
Yeah, unless you're talking about a child, and that means that child is awful.
Yeah.
He's a handful.
He's a handful.
Like, he's a handful. That means I'm going to have a bad weekend.
Because I'm hanging out with a five-year-old.
Who's a handful. Welcome to the last podcast
wow.
on the left, ladies
Ew.
And gentlemen.
Disgusting.
Oh,
I never want to say a boy's a handful.
Oh, that boy's a handful.
I'm two hands full. Henry Zebrowski. Yeah, that's right. I got just a tantalizing amount of tits that if you grabbed me in the dark, you'd think I'm the sexiest lady in prison.
And I'm a palm on the chest, Marcus Parks. There's nothing to grab onto here. Mm-hmm. And we've got, I mean, I would say maybe a length.
Yeah.
Ed Larson.
Yeah, I'm a solid B.
Yeah.
I'm a low B.
You don't have tits.
I don't. They're there.
I got a big chest.
You have a lot. You have a wide chest. You have a manly chest.
I feel like we have the same size chest.
Yes,
except my tits are small.
I just got my mother's breasts.
Yeah.
I'm shaped like an Italian sex pot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the joke that I have for you in my roast, is that, you know, everyone says that Ed Larson's fat, but I think he's more barrel-chested, but unfortunately that barrel is filled with disgusting fat.
Yeah. That's when I knew you were a good joke writer.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And today we actually have Ed Larson at the helm.
Mm.
I just did the Gary Ridgway series. We did a three-parter. So I'm handing the reins over to Eddie Larson today.
Oh, boy. You know, nothing actually, but a bunch of yucks today.
When I call you Eddie Larson, it really makes you sound like a criminal.
It is.
Thank you.
Yeah. Rambling Eddie Larson.
Well, you know, there might be a couple of confessions today.
All right, so let's get into some... God damn it.
What are you going to do?
No, I don't even want to.
It's hard.
It's
funny because, like, that is exactly why I picked the topic. I thought it would be fun. Women in chains, you know, behind bars.
Caged
you know?
Deep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's fun. It's silly. And then turns out when you really look into it, it's super sad.
Yeah. I just got that, what's it, Reform School Girls movie with Wendy O. Williams, because that's what Wendy's named after, our dog. We named her after Wendy O. Williams. And so I started watching that, and I was just like, I don't know if that movie really has a lot to do with what we're going to talk about today, because that involved a lot of wet women beating each other, a lot of spanking, a lot of like gripping, and then it was like a big man saying, "Get together, girls," and then they'd go like, "You got it, Mr. Walden."
You know, if you really examine it, it's really not that far off.
Hmm.
It's just not fun.
You just can't jerk off to it.
Yeah.
I wonder, are there any particularly fun prison movies?
I mean, back in the day,
Jailhouse Rock.
Jailhouse Rock.
Okay, but that's a jail movie.
Yeah,
that's not a prison.
And I think it's just a music video.
Oh, is it?
I think it is.
Oh, wow. I don't know.
I think that might be a full movie.
I don't know. I refuse to watch Elvis on film.
What a weird stance to have.
It sucks.
You're missing out on clam bakes.
I love a clam bake. But I do it myself. And that's because I'm from Florida.
Speaking of a clam bake... That's what happens when the ladies are in prison and down in Florida. And they don't have air conditioning.
Great segue, Henry.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So basically, when I was trying to come up with my next episode for last podcast and I left the uncle years, I didn't want to jump into another animal episode just yet. But if you remember back to the horrors of SeaWorld episodes I did, I stated that one of the most terrifying things to me is being ripped apart by animals.
Yeah. And like for me, it's not being seen.
Yeah, I know. Or someone talking over you.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But or a single fucking thought just staying in your head.
My job. I don't have any other job.
People do love you for it.
It's the only thing I do.
But the truth of the matter is, if you're going to die before your time, getting ripped apart by gators or stomped to death by an elephant is a pretty righteous way to say goodbye to Earth. It may not be as rad as your wingsuit not opening during a base jump or being consumed by lava while banging a reindeer or in a hail of bullets at a Klan rally, but getting ripped apart by animals can be a fun way to go. And if you got children, they'll never pay for another drink for the rest of their lives.
Think about your kids.
Yeah, that's old Billy Jensen. Father was ripped apart by raccoons back in 84.
Tell us about it, Billy.
First, you gotta show them to me.
I really wanted to put together something extra scary for y'all this episode. So I stretched my brain to combine what is the most pure primal fear that swims around the hell soup that is my mind, and something I've learned since joining the show that now fills me with dread. Largest fear, that's simple, going to prison.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I dream about it all the time. It's a fucking nightmare. It's the worst.
Been that my biggest fear since I was a child.
Yeah. I have a recurring dream where I go to prison for a crime I didn't commit, and I have to deal with it. I'm just going, No one believes me.
There's no fate worse than rotting in a place where laughter is met with violence, where your cellmate is just as scary as the guard put there to keep you safe from them. Prison is a place where you go to be forgotten, a place far away from society, a place made to destroy you mentally and physically. Rehab seems to be an afterthought these days. Recidivism in America is still at 50% 8 years out. It got better, but it's still pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, you weren't around for the Carl Panzeram years when we talked about how bad American prisons used to be. They're still fucking horrible. Like, don't get me wrong. But when you go back and look at what, like, the things that Panzeram went through, those men went through in, like, Leavenworth back in the day, it was damn near the goal was to kill them before they were released.
Yeah, you were rewarded for treating them bad.
But with Carl Panzeram, all of the tortures just made him physically stronger.
Yeah.
And then he took it out on the world.
Strong enough where he almost killed President Taft.
Really?
Yeah.
Is he the guy who tried to shoot him?
He
broke into his house just for fun.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, the best way to kill Taft, you tickle him a bunch, you get a heart attack.
You're a bully. Get around there, distract. Somebody call Teddy, he'll save me. Somebody help me, somebody bring me a bar of soup.
I had an extremely small taste of jail life. I personally spent 7 nights in jail and 3 separate trips, all in the Florida Panhandle. Now, in the grand scheme of things, that ain't shit. But it was more than enough to make me terrified of returning, but it also helped me develop an advanced level of empathy for the people inside. Now, fortunately, other than depression and getting probation that tested me for weed twice a week for a year, nothing bad really happened to me. I did have a comical interaction with an intake officer when he was checking my asshole for contraband.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Real quick.
This is our Comics Unleashed section.
So, Eddie, I understand that you've been to prison. Yeah. You've been to jail. Yeah. Why don't you tell us that story, Eddie?
Well, thanks, Byron.
He told me to strip down naked, bend over, spread my cheeks, and cough. But being new to jail life, I was incredibly nervous and thought he said, strip down naked, bend over, spread your cheeks, and talk. So there I was, my asshole aimed at the cop's line of sight, asking him how his day was and telling him what I had for breakfast.
Asshole meal. Like all the time. Yeah, that was the opportunity.
Yeah. Like you're fucking auditioning for the singing asshole part in Pink Flamingos? Hey, like, what?
Do you have any banaka? You know, that's the whole thing, man. That's the time to quote Avis Ventura.
I mean, it was redundant because from that angle, he clearly could have seen what I had for breakfast. He barked at me, cough. I said, cough, don't talk, cough. And then I retained my right to stay silent, except for a couple little coughs. And no cocaine fell out my tushy, and I was allowed to join the other incarcerated people that night.
You're lucky.
Yes, yeah, I was lucky.
You are. I mean, you say seven ain't a whole lot in the grand scheme of things, but in this room, I think you have everyone beat by seven.
Yeah. I've never been caught.
No, you haven't. I was living with Henry when I went to jail.
Yeah, and I drove him back and forth.
Yeah. That's nice, yeah. And I've never been arrested, but I have been detained many a time.
That's different. They do that to scare you.
Yeah. That's because people just like to hold you.
Well, you know, there was a cop back in my hometown, the one, and you know, he was easy on the kids.
Yeah, he understood, but he knew he'd just scare him.
Yeah.
And you're easy on the eyes.
That I am.
I don't need to be back in this car then.
So I like to think of my fears as somewhat rational. For instance, I'm not scared of flying because I know that Delta would never let me die because they don't want to pay out Julie. And plus, how often do commercial airliners fall out of the sky? A little too often if you listen to the Pain in the Everglades episode. But I am pretty scared of cars, mostly because people die in cars all the time. In fact, accidents are the number three cause of death in America. In the U.S., driving a car is a rational fear, especially when old stock car Zabrowski's driving.
I'm very safe when you're in the car.
You only became safe with me in the car after I requested you to be safer.
Yeah, because I had to drive slower than the speed limit. That's fine.
Actually, it wasn't safe. It was just, you're making me ill.
Yeah, you just didn't like.
So over the last couple of years, the thing I realized that is the most common denominator in absolutely horrific deaths mentioned on last podcast on the left is that they are unfortunately usually women. Roughly 92% of women murdered are by men they knew, and 62% of all women murdered are done in by a man who they were in a relationship with or closely related to. It's fucking scary ass numbers. I recently reconnected with a social worker friend of mine to ask about these facts, and they confirmed their truth. They went on to explain to me that the most dangerous moment for a woman in a domestic violence situation is the moment she tries to leave, and that multiple times when she met women in prison for murdering their abuser, they'll say even though they're in prison, they finally feel free. So all this information brought me around to the conclusion that the scariest thing to me is to be a woman in prison. And we'll just toss Florida in there to stay on brand.
You see, that helps.
You do have to narrow it down.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a lot of women in prison amongst these many 50 states.
Oh, my God. It's a nightmare. Suddenly, I was brought back to this crazy-ass story that came out of Tallahassee shortly after I graduated from drug court, a.k.a. probation, right before I moved up to New York to lose money doing comedy with Henry for many years.
No, don't forget doing podcasts with Marcus.
Yes,
you
I know.
You lost a lot of money doing that, too.
Yes, again.
But we didn't have dues.
Murderfist had dues.
I literally paid to be a Murderfist.
We did. We had dues, and we had a demerit system that did not hold water. And I'll always remember the time that we had an intervention for one of our members, and Ed showed up with a case of beer. And we're like, what are you doing? He's like, it's not an intervention for me. And I was just like, you're right. You know what? And it was like a whole thing. We're like, yeah.
That's true. June 21st, 2006, Federal Correction Institute in Tallahassee. There was a shootout at the women's prison, which left one guard and one FBI agent dead. No inmates were involved in said shootout. Juicy shit, right?
Yeah.
I thought this would be such a fun story to tell when I took over the next episode. But the truth is, even though it seems like a case that multiple books should have been written about, there really isn't more info than just a couple of articles. Why? So I sicked our research and junkyard dog, Rachel Burke, on it to see what she came back with. And well, this just lifted the lid on the amount of corruption, abuse, and murder that happens within the women's side of prisons in Florida. Turns out, not as radical as some of the documentaries us boys have watched in the past.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of them, man. Girl in the Big House.
Yeah.
Ladies in the Long House. Ladies in the Shower in the Big House. I've seen a lot of different things.
We've all seen Caged Heats 1 through 4.
Mm. Arrest me, I'm not home. Seen that?
Live from your grave. Now, this subject is thicker than me in yoga pants, so I'll only scratch the surface while covering it today. I'm going to concentrate on two female prisons in Florida to talk about this issue. That is the aforementioned FCI Tallahassee and Lowell Correctional Facility near Ocala. FCI Tallahassee opened in 1938 and was converted to house female prisoners in 1992, but its problems didn't become visible until the feds uncovered an elaborate sex for contraband scheme that involved six correction officers and incarcerated women there within. This didn't come out of nowhere. The feds conducted an 8-month undercover operation in cooperation with the DOJ. Turns out the feds used to do other stuff than just get drunk with the hockey team at the Olympics.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one of these days they'll get back to doing their job.
Honestly, though, maybe it's nice they're not working so hard right now. We can get away with a lot more stuff.
Well, that's the thing, is that the crime rate has been falling over the last few years, over the last 20 years or so.
We're just not prosecuting.
Maybe it's time to give the criminals a chance to catch back up again.
Yeah.
You're right!
Fair's fair here in America.
So they found from 03 to 05 that five guards were to be indicted on charges of sexual contact with female prisoners with 10 different incarcerated women. Their names were Ralph Hill, Alfred Barnes, Gregory Dixon, Alan Moore, and E. LeVon Spence. A sixth guard, Vincent Johnson, was accused of trying to cover up the crimes of his co-workers with threats and coercion.
So he wasn't even involved in it? He was just the cover man?
Yes, apparently. You know, like I said, there's very little real reporting on this. They wanted to sweep this under the rug as quickly as fucking possible.
I would imagine.
Yeah, because isn't this all like essentially private prisons too? Like,
well,
no,
this is a federal prison.
This is a federal prison, it's why they definitely want to cover it up.
Yeah. Now, before we get any further, I want to clarify that any sexual contact between a guard and an incarcerated person is rape. Full stop.
They don't have consent. They legally don't have consent.
They are unable to consent to sex with a guard because a guard holds extreme power over them. Guards control their housing, discipline, privileges, contraband exposure, and access to family. That's even before we get to the fact that they're at work. And if a McDonald's manager is going to be held accountable for having sex with an employee in the stockroom, then so should a fucking prison guard, especially since they're literally locking up the person they're having sex with every night. And quick sidebar to McDonald's, by adding those self-ordering machines, all you're doing is giving your employees extra time to fuck in the stockroom. Just saying.
It's also another thing to jerk off on. As a customer.
As a customer.
Yes. Another thing to wipe down for the employee.
Yes. So in this 13-page indictment, 40 separate crimes were listed and 70 such occurrences. During this period, the guards strategically swapped shifts, covered for one another, passed messages, and obtained cash to facilitate their sexual escapades with female prisoners. For the incarcerated women, the criminal guards brought in weed, cash, booze, and personal messages from family. The guards would then extort the women's families for up to $600 a pop, which is a lot of money in Tallahassee.
It is.
Yes, especially back then. Just before 8 a.m. on June 21st, 2006, federal agents entered the facility to arrest the six guards as they came off their night shifts. This was supposed to be a low-risk arrest, being that it was taking place at the prison as they got off work.
Why did these guys do this? Why wait till after the workday is done? These guys are not the way, that's not a way to arrest somebody. Get them in the beginning of the day. Get them at the top of the day.
No, you want to get the work out of them.
I just don't understand.
Well, I think at the end of the day is that all you're thinking about is going home, and you're tired, and And you're not really thinking straight.
See, that's when I'd fight the hardest. If you got me on my way to work, I'd be like, yeah, you know what? I'll go to jail.
Fine.
Yeah. You know, I'd be like, I got to go to work? Fine.
Yeah, but you spent the last 2 hours just fucking dreaming about going home and having fun on the couch, playing some fucking Elden Ring or some BG3.
But there's something you know super well. It's jail.
The Bureau of Prisons, the BOP, has a rule that even officers can't bring weapons inside prison facilities. So it would be safe to arrest them as they left work. The hitch being that FCI Tallahassee had very loose rules for checking the cops when they arrived at work. Hence all the weed and booze they were able to sneak in for the women victimized by their scheme. Officer Ralph Hill must have had his personal gun with him every day he went to work, because the FBI specifically kept this arrest a secret because they were trying to avoid this exact disaster. From what I can tell, the actual gunfight was quick, maybe even less than a minute. Sometimes that's all it takes. 1 minute, your gun goes off and your life is changed forever. This section of the podcast is presented by Trojan.
And for those of you who aren't American, your personal gun is, it's not your professional gun. It's not your work gun.
No, that's your business casual gun. I have my business casual gun. I have my cocktail gun. And then, honestly, I have my brunch gun.
Yeah. I do like the gun you guys issued me, by the way. I really appreciate it.
Hey, don't worry. After 10 years, you're going to get your anniversary gun.
Oh, with the pearl handle. Yeah.
We are in the culture war, after all.
Yeah. And don't forget to pack your formal gun for the ceremony.
The person who, just so you know, because that's why I have the gun, for the person who corrected me about the weather movie about World War II, I'm going to use it to shoot you in the face.
So as Hill was exiting the building, he saw the federal agents gathering outside to arrest him and his cohorts. And without thinking too much about it, he opened the lobby door and opened fire. He shot two Bureau of Prison employees in his suicide by better cop scenario. He shot an unnamed BOP lieutenant and Special Agent William Sentner. Sentner was able to return fire, killing Hill in the prison courtyard. Special Agent William Sentner later died of his wounds at the hospital. He was posthumously given the Medal of Valor by former president and war criminal George W. Bush. The other five correction officers gave up without a fight.
Yeah, that's why you always bring your personal gun.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And that's why a lot of times you got to keep the little snub gnomes in your sock as well.
Yeah, if those other four, five guys brought their personal guns, maybe they would have stood a chance.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. But one guy remembered to bring his gun that day.
See, this is also an example of these guys had already become criminals.
Yeah.
So they were criminals. So it didn't matter. They were criminals amongst criminals, and the entire organization aided and abetted it. And I just think I think it's interesting that the FBI kind of waltzed in there like it was going to be some easy thing, not understanding it was the inmates running the asylum.
Yeah. One of the things I kept hearing and seeing when I was doing research for this episode was that there's two types of criminals inside jails, and that is the criminals that are there that got arrested and the ones that are guarding them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Prison guard is a very sticky job in America. You really don't know what you're going to get.
It's a hard, because it's horrific.
Yeah.
It's a horrific job. It's also underpaid, as all as any horrific job is. It's like, I know the retirement's like early. It's like a 15-year period. Like, it's like one of the lowest amount of works you have to retire. You can work and then retire and get a pension on, from what I understand.
Yeah. And but a pension is so valuable if you want to try to retire, especially if you like a soldier and have PTSD. Like
that's my uncle. My dad did. My mom's still taking my dad's pension. It's a whole thing, but it came. That's the reason why they do these things, because they're also trying to make money while they're in there, trying to maximize the time that they're spending in this dangerous place. I think in some way there's almost this idea that I'm creating an economy amongst us, and it almost creates like an order, because it's like another type of order in a way. But I also think that they're all just criminals.
Well, I mean, it can turn a good man hard. Remember one of my closest friends, his dad suddenly decided, when growing up, one of my closest friends growing up, his dad decided to be a prison guard. And he did that like 4 days on, 3 days off thing.
Yeah.
And when he came back, like he was a quiet guy, but he was still kind of jovial. And after he started being a prison guard, he's just... just nothing. It was like he just turned off.
I mean, because in prison, everybody's scanning you for vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
Yeah. My uncle was telling me how he like would see this, like multiple people eat their own shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it'll fuck you up.
Yeah. It's weird in there.
Yeah.
Like this, no one ever talks about the prison is just fucking weird.
Yeah.
Men alone make a lot of weird decisions together.
They do.
So Ralph Hill, he kind of screwed the pooch for the other cops with this incident. After he went down in a hail of bullets, that pretty much solidified the other guard's fate as guilty. The sentences doled out to these criminals with badges were varied, but not that stiff. Alfred Barnes, Gregory Dixon, and Alan Moore got 1 year in prison, 3 years probation, and a $2,000 fine. E. LeVon Spence got 1 year house arrest, mostly because he suffered a stroke after his arrest. And Vincent Johnson, the guard that tried to silence and abuse women, he just got probation. One former resident of FCI Tallahassee, Ashley Turner, said that the scheme had been going on longer than 2 years and involved three times as many guards as the amount reprimanded. So,
of course, there's so many guys that are trying to keep it copacetic, because it's like, I'm certain, again, it's complicated, it's
fucking wildly complicated.
Yeah, and I would imagine, I mean, and I'm, this is just wild speculation here, but just knowing what I know about humans, I would imagine that even with amongst the prison guards, they're probably crews.
Of like, course,
the, you
yes.
know, amongst the prison guards, where it's like, this was one crew.
Very much so. We're going to get into that kind of a little bit later. I will say that after this, things at FCI Tallahassee got a lot better, and conditions at the prison improved to the point where they're a new model prison for the rest of America.
Wow!
Man, fantastic.
That's incredible.
That was a joke.
Oh, no.
You couldn't tell?
Oh, wow.
Come on, guys. EddieTunes.com. That shit's funny.
You're just saying fake things. It's not a joke. Yeah. That's just a lie, Eddie.
I used to be a professional joke writer, kind of like how you used to be an actor.
Oh, that's great.
Well, all Garrison Keillor level humor aside, it's still awful there. You see, they only started reporting complaints in 2002, and from 2012 to now, there have been 130 complaints alleging staff on prisoner abuse, and a few of those official complaints were actually filed by female guards against their male co-workers. This is amongst one of the highest rates of abuse in federal prisons nationwide. So, FCI Tallahassee is not somewhere you want to find yourself.
No.
That didn't stop people recently from calling FCI Tallahassee a club fed, especially when an old enemy of the show, Ghislaine Maxwell, was being held there.
She's still an enemy of the show.
No.
When Ms. Giz was there, people were focused on the old, on the more progressive programs at the prison, like yoga and music classes, as well as cosmetology and baking programs. You know, basic things prisons should do to properly rehabilitate inmates.
Yeah, they're still humans.
Yeah.
Then they might not, they might get out of jail. They might need skills.
Yeah, exactly. And so when Maxwell was in prison there, there was a constant flurry of paparazzi in the parking lot at FCI Tallahassee. The whole place was in the public spotlight. Oddly enough, probably improving conditions inside there for a brief period. Things were for sure safer for Ghislaine more than other incarcerated women because of her high profile. By leaving the prison, Ghislaine did what she does best, putting women in danger. Ghislaine has since moved to a place simply called Federal Prison Camp Bryan in Bryan, Texas. She was College Station.
Texas A&M.
Exactly. She was moved there by our pedophile president, wished her well or something like that. I can't remember.
Well, he was trying to get her help, and then she said no, and he still gave her stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's so good at stuff.
What a good guy.
Yeah.
He's so good at the job.
Yeah, and good to women.
He is.
Yeah, with a lot of respect for him.
Great at work.
So this place in Bryan is much more of a club fed. Not that I think that's a bad thing, by the way.
No.
And Ghislaine even said so herself in an email she sent out claiming that her conditions vastly improved, even recanting an FCI Tallahassee story where a possum fell through the roof of the kitchen and onto the oven, thus mingling with the food being served that day. Now that's some real Tallahassee cooking right there, boy. I tell you the truth.
I really think that they could treat white collar criminals worse. Mm-hmm. I actually don't think we should have club vets. I think that we should be harder on them. I think that's kind of the problem with it, is that it's such a, they think about this. I'm thinking like about fucking Mr. Murdoch. Alec Murdoch. He gets to sit in fucking Cushash jail, even though he's killed his whole fucking family, and he gets to sit in Cush jail.
Well, now he does.
Yes, he's in 40-year-old Cush jail, 40 years of Cush fucking club fed shit, and I think that that's, fuck him. Fuck him. They should be, Bernie Madoff should be in a hardcore Supermax prison. That's where he should have been. Fuck him.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I just don't feel like any prison should be that way. I think you should actually try and rehabilitate the people.
Yeah, I don't think Supermax prison should exist.
But I'm saying some people have to be punished, though. There's going to have to be prisons at some point. And I just feel like, what are we doing here? The white-collar criminals are learning nothing.
Yeah.
The everybody else, yeah, they're in bad prisons, and they're born poor, and their lives were fucked, and they're doing all this shit, and then they get to go to another level of prison too. Fuck them.
I always live by like the thought of, and I know that humans and dogs are separate, but like, you know, hitting a bad dog doesn't make it a better dog.
If we're going to have them, put them in there. If we're not going to have them for anybody, that's a different story. That's my view. If we're not having them for anybody, then great. But if we're having them, put those guys in them too.
I absolutely cannot argue with that.
He's spoken like a man who pays his taxes.
If we're going to torture people, let's Torture the right ones.
Yes, torture the bad ones too. They all need it.
I remember one day me and my buddy were drinking real hard in New York, and he was, you know, awful, and he was going around trying to kick cars and stuff like that, and there was like a shitty little Mazda, and I stopped him. I was like, hey man, if you're gonna kick a car, kick a Mercedes.
Yeah, kick a nice car.
Hey, yeah, that's just some guy just trying to get by.
Yeah, his life sucks. Yeah. So fuck his life up.
So oddly enough, I have a weird personal connection here where I can second just Lane's statement. You see, I said earlier, I spent a couple of days incarcerated in Leon County Jail in Tallahassee. It was god awful. The food there was so bad that I would have welcomed a possum burger. I remember one afternoon, me and a couple of the boys there were curious about the cheese. You see, the cheese, it bent a little bit, but it was still super strong, you know? And no matter how hard any of us tried, it would not melt. We even put a slice in the dryer for an hour and pulled it out intact. That was how fucking gross this shit was.
God, it's not real food. Yeah, it's going to be chemicals and preservatives.
Yeah, you know that dog food has higher
nutritional value?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Then about a decade later, I actually did a comedy show in Bryan County Jail. That place was run pretty well, which I'm sure is why they let us in with a camera crew. Bryan County, Texas is actually home to one of the most progressive sheriffs and former American Jail Association president, Wayne Dickey. Sheriff Dickey ran a pretty tight ship over there. And one day when we were shooting, he said something that really stuck with me. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but he said he wanted his jail to be a place of true rehabilitation because most of the people behind bars would be getting out one day and they would again be his neighbors. And he wanted to live next to good people. Not a bad sentiment, especially in Texas.
Yeah, because I thought Texas hated their neighbors, like specifically. I thought Texas hates neighbors.
No, that
just Mexico.
Yeah,
just Mexico, Oklahoma, New Mexico,
Austin,
and Louisiana.
The one of their own cities, yeah. everything
around touching their borders. Yeah. No, as a Texan, that statement rings true. I have heard people have that sort of sentiment. But I will also say that's an old sentiment. There's not a lot of people in Texas who think like that anymore.
Yeah, and well, there's a reason that this particular part of Texas is shown in the national spotlight.
Yeah.
So to hear that life is better for Ghislaine once she moved to Bryan, Texas, makes a lot of sense to me personally.
Sure.
Yeah, and College Station, like, it's a college town.
Yeah.
It's called College Station. That's Bryan, Texas, right? I mean, it's attached to College Station.
Yeah, it's right
Texas
there.
A&M, one of the biggest schools in one of the biggest state schools in the entire state. So, and it's a very nice part of Texas.
Yeah, I was very surprised when I was down there how much I liked everything.
Texas
yeah.
can be beautiful.
Yeah, incredible German food down there.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I just had the ribs. So since 2006, 10 officers at FCI Tallahassee have been indicted on cases of sexual abuse, corruption, and abuse of prisoners. 11 if you count a dirty dentist who worked there.
Ooh, a dirty dentist.
Yeah. Other than the 5 made famous by the shootout, the others' names are Corliss Renew, Philip Golighty, Jimmy Lee Highsmith, Lenton Jerome Hatton, Keratons Keenan, and prison dentist Gottfried Onuga, I think.
Onuga.
Yeah. I say their names because fuck these motherfuckers.
Can I tell you how they're all sitting in Texas?
Sure.
Yeah. That's Corliss Renew.
Philip Golightly.
Philip Golightly. Jimmy Lee Highsmith. Linton Jerome Hatton. Caron Trace Keenan. And Gottfried Onuga.
Oh, Onuga.
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 Remember, yeah. Every middle syllable in a Texas word is 3 syllables. Yeah. They're in every vowel.
Yeah,
every vowel is included in every word, no matter what.
Yeah, and the emphasis is always put on the wrong part. Like, for example, the next
Jimmy Lee Highsmith. Jimmy Lee Highsmith.
Like, for example, the next town over from me was a town that if you looked at the name, you'd think it's like, oh, that's the town called O'Brien.
Yeah.
No. It's O'Brien.
Well, it's like Miami. Was yeah. it Miami?
Miami. But no, it's if you ever said like, oh yeah, I'm going over to O'Brien. No, it's I'm going over to O'Brien.
O'Brien.
Yeah.
Let Jerome Hatton.
Yeah. Onuga.
Now, I'm not going to get into all these guys' stories, but Jimmy Highsmith is a particularly atrocious shit bastard of a man. He had a string of civil suits placed against him from 2010 to 2021, with multiple women he raped having to be rushed to the emergency room. He was caught in the act by another guard, and one of the victims that reported him was thrown in solitary confinement for her own protection. Highsmith, being the total psychopath that he is, then requested to work the isolation unit where she was being held in hopes to intimidate her into dropping the charges. Eventually, he was suspended for 10 days and then moved to a different federal prison in Mississippi called FCC Yazoo City. He was then given a promotion, an admin job. Part of his new cushy job there was ensuring that complaints and grievances filed by staff and inmates against guards were thoroughly investigated. Finally, in 2021, his crimes caught up with him, and he was indicted on 3 counts of rape against inmates. Each count held a maximum sentence of 15 years. In the end, he was only convicted on 1 count because the evidence was so overwhelming they couldn't sweep it under the rug. They had prisoner complaints, guard witnesses, and video footage. He was given 48 months and should be getting released soon. Please do not confuse him with smooth jazz saxophonist Jimmy Highsmith Jr., who is doing everything he can with his groovalicious sax riffs to make consensual sex all that much more enjoyable for all of us.
Was that his dad?
Oh, no.
No, right?
There's never been a saxophonist in history that's done a single crime.
No,
never.
They don't do crimes. Jazz men don't.
Oh. No, jazz, especially jazz saxophonists.
Jazz guys don't do crime.
Don't look into it.
just leave him alone. Just let's not look at it. Yeah.
Coming up next week, our 3-part series on the crimes of Boots Randall.
Oh, God. God, I can't even imagine if you go back to the blues guys.
Oh, no, the horrible story behind Yakety Sax.
Oh, my God.
I wish. The blood spilled around Yakety Sax.
All right, so how are you all doing? You need a break?
Nah,
I'm good.
All right, great. We're just get ready to start diving into Lowell Correctional Institution. I promise to end this episode with a fun-ish story, and my next episode will be far sillier.
It's gotta be.
I promise. I didn't mean for this to happen. It's just what happened.
My next one's gonna be awful.
Yes, it
great.
Is.
Great.
Mine is awesome. Mine's gonna be silly. You're gonna see mine. It'll be silly, but it's got a lot of depth.
Thank you for doing that.
You're welcome.
So, as we learn,
mine's a tragedy that killed the soul of America.
Yeah. What are you talking about? The Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction? Yeah, that's right. We're coming up the 6-episode series about the Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction that changed us all.
I'm in sync with that, dude. See, as we learned when I talked about Alligator Pelican in my last episode, sometimes the location of a prison can be a form of punishment. Many federal prisons are built in the middle of nowhere because big cities or high-income areas aren't too keen on having a federal prison in their neighborhood. Lowell Prison is in between Ocala and Gainesville. Henry, how would you describe that part of Florida?
I say it's a place that needs a neutron bomb. I think it needs a neutron bomb.
So the infrastructure is good, but you just need to get rid of the people.
Yeah. Okay, I think that everything can be salvaged business and building wise. And infrastructure wise, we can really get into that. I think that's fine. We don't need to rebuild the highways, but we do need to get rid of all the people.
Yeah, for me, I hear Gainesville and just the word Ripper immediately is attached to
See,
it.
See, Gainesville's like a little like liberal spot in the whole state. It's really right outside of it. It's like,
yeah.
Because Ocala, you've all heard me talk about how bad Ocala is.
It's pretty fucking awful.
Ocala's one of the dead places of the soul of America. Mm. There's certain places in this country of ours that are not. Asheville, wonderful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's certain other places that you go and you're just like, oh, wow, this is the dusty corner where all of our lives and degradation lives.
Yeah. Like Odessa, Texas.
Ocala's mm-hmm. one.
Yeah.
Ocala's not quite Lake City, but it's almost there.
It's there.
Now, this may be
Don't even talk about Punta Gorda. Punta Gorda is where you go to get impregnated by your grandfather.
And you know what they say about Niceville? It sucks.
Yeah. I gotta say, we need that shirt. That's a good one. They need that shirt. Yeah.
Welcome to Niceville. It sucks. Like, it's great.
Now, this may be a shocker to you, but there are way more poor people in prison than rich people.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes. Hypothetical. Let's say your daughter got into a fight at the bar and got a heavy sentence for assault because women often receive stiffer sentences than men for the same crimes. And that statement is for sure true about Black, brown, and indigenous women.
It sounds like she just took the training well I gave her my whole life.
Now let's say you're from Pensacola and they decide to put your daughter at Lowell Correctional. That's a 6-hour drive. And you're only allowed to visit for 1 hour. You can't just get back in your car and drive home after the visit. That's assuming you have enough money to even own a car. So you have to get a hotel room, but you can't just go for one day because a trip like this can cost a lot of time and money, and you most likely can't get back there in a while, and you got to go back to work. So that's assuming you're lucky enough to be employed, including the missed time from work. A simple trip to visit your daughter in prison could end up costing you well over $1,000.
Yeah, it's all about the punishing people all around the whole system. It's punishing people that are poor way harder than punishing people who are rich.
Don't even get me fucking started on the phone calls cost.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy.
Oh, no, that's the American way is poverty is very expensive.
Yeah. So Lowell Correctional Institution holds most of Florida's female prisoners. With a population of almost 3,000 women, it is the largest women's prison in the United States. Lowell Correctional is a playground for predator guards. There are too few cameras, all right? In the past decade, thanks to things like COVID, there have been staff shortages and mismanagement.
COVID was an excuse for a lot of these fuckers to rip out everything and then not put anything back. Yeah. Still, 6 years later.
It's exactly right. The female prisoners have said the abuse has become intolerable. Think about that. They basically said the abuse we used to get was manageable, but now we're totally fucked. In 2020, the DOJ said that Lowell was in direct violation of the Eighth Amendment and the Civil Rights of Institutionalized Persons Act and gave them 49 days to get their act together or get shut down. Then Florida Secretary of Corrections Mark Inch, who was named after his cock, I believe...
It's from the he's from a long family of inches.
See, Mark denied the claims by the DOJ, and way past that 49-day marker, was asked if changes had been made to improve the prison, and he simply said no. That's it. And there it is. The only honest thing a prison employee will say in this episode.
Absolutely not.
So Mark Inch, quick history, stepped down after being director of prisons federally in 2017 after a House Oversight and Government Reform Committee was investigating the BOP. Corpulent-faced Ron DeSantis thought that was awesome and hired Inch to be in charge of Florida's prisons. He retired after a year on the job. Mark Inch was just another person incapable of cleaning up Lowell and other Florida prisons.
Well, incapable because he didn't want to and he didn't care. And I'm sure DeSantis just put him in because that happens a lot, especially in modern times when it comes to government, is they just put somebody in there that they know will do a bad job.
Yeah.
Or they know just won't do the job. And it's just a placeholder until you put another person in there and another person in there.
And you know what's great about an underqualified person? They're super loyal. Truly. They'll do whatever you say.
Yeah,
it's really because will. They want the job. They love the clout. They've been given a job that they don't deserve. It's why we have Kash Patel right now. It's the idea is they were given a job that they don't deserve, and so now they desperately have to keep it because the second Kash Patel's not FBI director anymore, we're all coming for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, he's going to be investigated.
Yeah, he's very much going to be investigated.
Yes, all are.
And it's nothing new. It goes, you know, I mean, even in our lifetime, it goes back to Michael Brown, head of FEMA, the fucked up Katrina so badly that ran horse shows before George W. Bush made him the head of our federal response to emergencies.
They're favors to buddies.
Yeah, they're favors.
So this is all going to lead us to the suspicious death of incarcerated woman LaTondra Ellington. One of the main problems at Lowell Correctional is guards covering for each other and retaliation towards women who report abuse. Often women who file the report of abuse usually find themselves in solitary confinement, which is torture.
Yes.
On September 21st, 2014, LaTondra Ellington witnessed Sergeant Patrick Quercioli raping a fellow inmate and reported it. 10 days later, on October 1st, 2014, she was found dead in her cell. She was a 36-year-old woman with only 7 months from release. Quercioli, or Sergeant Q, as he's known around the prison, began to threaten LaTondra if she didn't withdraw her report. Sergeant Q also had it out for LaTondra because this was the second time she had filed a report on him. The first time was for making her sleep on the top bunk, even though she had a medical pass to sleep on the bottom bunk because she had an injured back. LaTondra, not that her crime matters, was imprisoned for tax fraud and doing a 22-month stint. You know, about half as long as serial rapist Jimmy Highsmith got. She also suffered from hypertension and was on blood pressure medication. It is said that the only people who are guaranteed free health care in America are incarcerated people. That don't mean it's good health care. Not to get off on too much of a tangent here, but prison health care is a disaster, mostly due to staffing. Not just from lack of medical staff, but from lack of adequate amount of prison guards.
They're doing a good job of keeping Gary Ridgway alive. It's like them and Bernie Madoff also live for a real fucking long time. All these guys, they get great. Some of them get good health care. Yeah. I think the ones that are fucking the big name ones get good health care.
BTK still going strong.
Yeah, dude.
What, really?
Living life.
That's crazy.
Not looking great.
No.
He doesn't get as many peptides.
Did he ever look great?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ed, do I have some photos to show you?
Yeah, dude, let's jerk off. Let's fucking jerk off to some BTK bondage footage.
Live from your grave.
Well, one thing you were right about earlier, Henry, is that being a prison guard in Florida is kind of like a last resort job. Basically, they get paid about $45,000 a year. And as Chris Rock put it so eloquently, you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
The turnover rate of medical staff in prisons is through the roof. With lack of enough guards, medical workers are often attacked themselves. So no inmate can see a medical professional without two guards getting them and bringing them to said medical professional, which is rarely a doctor themselves.
Man, every medical procedural show in history always has that one episode where it starts off and say, yeah, we got a patient coming in. He's a prisoner.
It's always that.
Yeah, and there's always one person who's scared of him, and then by the end of it, they're advocating for them.
Yeah, because he's like, you learn, he's like, there was only so much I could do. He stole my mouse. So it's just the most lovable prisoner you've ever met in your life.
Either that or...
I just tried to save them from robbing the pet store, and the man fell down.
Or it's the new way to do it is the guy's like, I killed a man when I was 17. I'm 53 now.
I've been talking my whole life.
I've never. You think you could maybe go to my old high school and give me a piece of cake from the cafeteria?
You ever had your whole life thrown away for one mistake? Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah, you're right. It's me, no more Jennifer Lopez. And I've got to say, that's sad.
That's my Jennifer Lopez impression.
I wanted to get a better understanding of all this shit, so I hit up a nameless buddy of mine who used to work in the medical field inside of corrections. They said, if you're sick, you put in a request to see a doctor, and then it could be days or even weeks before you're seen. Many people die waiting for healthcare. If you get shanked and you're in a rural hospital, two guards have to go with you in an ambulance to the hospital. And sometimes, because of the rural locations of these prisons, that may be a 3-hour ride to a hospital. Plus, then, hospitals have been known to overcharge the prisons once they get there.
Hospitals overcharge anybody that goes in. You think that they're going to fucking draw the line at prisoners? No. Absolutely not.
Oh, God. Once the federal government gets involved, man, they are taking, or it's federal or state government.
Yeah,
the
all
hospital's
making money.
Taking them for as long of a ride as they can.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so let's say there's an extreme situation of a riot and many people are injured and stabbed. First, there's a total lockdown. No one gets seen during that time. Then hours later, they start to see patients, which is super cool when you have a puncture wound in your kidney. Now, also, I learned about something else that they called compassionate release.
Yeah, they did it for what's-her-name. Well, they tried to. From the Manson family.
Susan Atkins?
Yeah, they were trying to get her out for a while because she was dying of cancer.
Yeah, if you're really sick, they release you so you can go die at home. I was happy to hear this. I needed a brighter side looking into all this shit. Turns out, Compassionate release can be used as a weapon to kill somebody they don't want to actually treat or can't afford to treat. Oh, it's going to be expensive and a pain in the ass to give this person chemo? Let's release them. Then once they're released, they're penniless with no health insurance. It's a legal death sentence through poverty and neglect.
I just thought there's a way to give this to just the molesters, right? Like, if there's a way to do this to just the... This is what I've been saying even before. It's just like, I feel like drug charges, that's the fucking... I can't even believe, like, tax fraud, fuck that, whatever, all that kind of shit. But once we're in the fucking and sucking of kids and all that kind of stuff, I feel like that's fine.
Yeah.
I think it's fine. I think, like, fuck them, right? In a way, just for them, for those guys.
I thought about this for myself, like, at the end, if I thought, like, okay, if I were to spend, you know, be life in prison, you know, I'm in my 60s, I get cancer, and they say, like, either we can treat you with chemo and you can live another 10 years in prison, or you can die at home within a few months, I'd choose to die at home within a few months.
Of course!
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, also, like, chemo could be just as bad. Also, it's not like prison's getting the good chemo. You know what I mean? Like, you're not getting the good stuff. You know, like, it's not like that. They're not caring. They're not putting up a video of Moana to calm you down. They're not doing any of that shit.
That's true. That is true. It is the bad chemo.
I know how calming Moana gets you.
As I'm just taking my chemo, just being like, can I just take this home? I want to do my chemo in my house.
That's probably one step away from antifreeze.
I mean, yeah,
straighten
yes.
your fucking veins.
Oh, yeah.
Back to LaTondra Ellington. She was in close contact with her aunt, Algarine, and her aunt recalls being petrified of Sergeant Q after the first report. After the second report, she was under constant surveillance. Her outgoing mail was read and no private phone calls. Someone would just stand over her while she made every call. Q was usually the person doing it, listening to every word that she was saying. Eventually, to let her aunt know what was happening to her, she sent out letters to her under another incarcerated person's name. In the letters, she stated that she saw Q and Officer Dustin Thrasher involved in abusing inmates, although they did not state exactly what she saw in those letters.
Yeah, I'm do more of a slashing thing. So it's been a thrashing thing. I'm more of that of bashing. I do more bashing and slashing more than thrashing.
It's Q and Slash and Thrasher?
Yes. And Officer Thrasher.
Yeah.
These are our current bad guys.
Officer Q, Officer Thrasher.
In those letters, though, she detailed her fear of Q and mentioned that he threatened her. He was going to beat me to death and mess me like a dog, she said. All in my face, grabbed his radio and threatened to bust me in the head with it, was a direct quote. Another inmate reported that she saw Q tell LaTondra that he would get rid of her if she didn't drop the report. Sergeant Baran Bergner, who took the report from a crying and terrified Ellington, said that he was confronted by Curcioli and Thrasher and then said they were going to take him out into the parking lot if he filed the report. Turns out, Berger took himself out to the parking lot to get in his car and drive away, scared shitless.
Bye-bye. It was the scene from Dollmaker.
Yeah.
I'll be back. I promise.
When Bergner got home, he realized that he forgot the binder the report was in on his desk. He panicked. He called the prison and asked a fellow employee to look for it. They said they couldn't find it. Bergner drove back to the prison in the middle of the night to look for it. It was mysteriously missing. He was truly scared of Q and Thrasher, so he went on a stress leave the next day. A week later, he saw LaTondra's picture in the news, and he had a feeling he knew what happened.
So it's Q, Thrasher, and Berger?
Bergner.
Bergner.
Yeah, these are all characters from Sleepers.
Yeah. Bergner is fine.
Yeah.
He's just a pussy.
Yeah, he's just a pussy. He didn't want to stick his neck out.
Yeah. A little bit about Patrick Curcioli. Old Q is a steroid monster of a man covered in tats with a notorious temper. When he worked for Martin County Sheriff's Office, he got arrested for selling steroids back in 1994. He also admitted to using the drug while employed. His file had a letter from a sergeant that said that Curcioli had been repeatedly counseled and reprimanded, ignored department policy, manipulated the rules to benefit himself, and showed no respect for supervisors or authority. The steroid charges were dropped after he agreed to complete an 18-month drug prevention program. His law enforcement certification was suspended from 1994 to 1996, followed by a year of probation.
Oh, he learned a lot in that little break.
Yeah. You know, during that downtime, he was arrested again.
Oh.
On battery this time.
Well, that was research on prison.
Yeah.
This is all about researching the prison system and what the prisoner goes through from intake through separation.
Yeah, he beat a motorist in a road rage incident in Coral Gables.
Man, tell me about it. Fucking God, I'm jealous.
So before the Florida Department of Corrections rehired him in 2004, he said the steroids were fake and planted by a crazy ex-girlfriend.
Crazy ex-girlfriend. You know how they know what steroids are.
Yeah. Yeah, he said the road rage was self-defense.
Yeah, of course.
And they were in desperate need of guards, so they hired him.
What do you think? Fake steroids planted by a crazy ex-girlfriend.
It's a lot of stuff.
Put a bunch of syringes in his fucking duffel bag.
He's steroids.
He said they were oil and water.
Oh, sure.
But they don't test for that, obviously.
Yeah, because that's usually how criminal convictions work. Is that if someone just writes steroids on a bottle
and puts it in your bag,
automatic conviction.
Yeah, because they don't test those things. They don't do that.
Yeah,
especially when you admit to doing it.
Yeah.
So on October 1st, 2014, when Latondra didn't wake up, it appeared that she just died peacefully in her sleep. Her autopsy concluded that she died of natural causes. Now, there are so many nuanced moving parts here, and the Miami Herald did an amazing detailed report on it. Here are some of the highlights of the weird happenings surrounding the death of Ms. Ellington. The Miami Herald were actually the ones who noticed something was wrong in her toxicology screening. That screening showed that she had a toxic level of amlodipine, a blood pressure medication. It was in her system, 8 times the normal amount.
Yeah.
Also, her cell was not treated like a crime scene. There were no fingerprints taken, no DNA samples. Nothing in the cell was processed. Officers and inmates who served Latondra meals were not interviewed, nor were inmate orderlies who worked in the area that morning. Latondra's cellmate, Jamie Shepard, said Ellington questioned what drug she was being given the day before, and a nurse named Donna Weeks told her that they were, quote, two of this and something else. Her cellmate said that Latondra woke up that morning, ate breakfast, and went back to sleep at 9 a.m. She thought everything was fine until Latondra started snoring louder than usual, with her fists tightly clenched. Latondra was pronounced dead at 11:20 a.m. She was 36 years old.
So they hot-shotted her basically with blood pressure medication.
That's what it sounds like.
To knock her out, to have her stop doing the report.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even after all the evidence was found, Latondra Ellington's death was not investigated further. Curcioli, Thrasher, and everyone else involved escaped legal action. 3 months later, Curcioli and Thrasher were fired because they were unable to perform their duties. I did some digging to see what I could find out about old Patrick Curcioli was up to these days, and he was interviewed on a motorcycle lover's blog. He loves his custom motorcycle that he rides while wearing his vintage German war helmet.
That's what my father had as well. He had the World War One helmet that was very ironic.
But I'm guessing that he's not vintage. Going.
He didn't have
Kaiser.
He didn't have the point.
Yeah, okay. My dad had the point.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
Yeah,
and that's going back to the Kaiser. That's something I can see that. But if it's other kinds of vintage world German.
He's also on Facebook. Yeah. Where he thinks he's a photographer, but it just seems like he's really into distorted filters and AI images. But my favorite fact about the new Q, the new and improved Q, is that he has multiple albums on Spotify where he cosplays as an indigenous Seminole flute player.
You know, I will say, at least it's art. You know what I mean? It's race changing, but at least he's playing the flute.
And we know it's him.
Yes.
So he knows.
I triple checked. Yeah. It's definitely him.
It's better. At least he's embraced art. You know what I mean? That's a motorcycles and flute. You know, besides the racial parts of it, at least that's something nice.
I mean, if we are talking about rehabilitation and turning lives around, maybe he did find some sort of solace, find some sort of peace.
Be out of that.
Yeah. Be out of murdering inmates.
Yeah. But he was never actually punished.
Yes. No. Yeah, no, he was, but he even tried.
Punishment's enough. He lives in Ocala.
All right, I promise y'all a funner story from Lowell Correctional Facility, so here it is. It's the story of Marie Dean Arrington.
I really like this story.
Yeah. Mean Marie was her nickname, no. And she was a bad mama bitch. She got that fun nickname because before she turned 40, she had been charged with over 60 crimes.
Woo!
She'd been found guilty of manslaughter and murder on two different victims 4 years apart. She'd been sentenced to death, making her one of the only women in the country on death row.
Yeah!
She then escaped from death row and began a three-year-long run from the law where she would earn the distinction of being the second woman in history to make the FBI's 10 most wanted list. And again, she accomplished all of this before the age of 40. What have you done with your life?
I'm just a doctor. I'm just a lawyer doctor that does court during the day and surgeries at night.
Who is the first? Was it Bonnie Parker?
I have no idea.
Because that's when you said it was she was the second. I figured it was one. It could have been Bonnie Parker, Ma Barker, or Carolyn Fugit. One
it's
of those.
The '60s. So whoever was before that.
Who
was
all the three other of those women were before that.
Who was the other one? The Texas one.
You're thinking of Carla Faye Tucker.
That's what I'm thinking of.
That's
yeah.
not until the '80s, late '80s, yes. early '90s. But she was on death row as well.
So Marie,
I know my ladies.
You know who's your ladies in prison. Yeah.
Marie was born in Leesburg, Florida, 1933. And trust me when I say that is not the ideal place or time to be growing up as a young black woman.
No. I did a movie in Leesburg. It's one of the worst cities in the whole country.
Oh.
Yep.
Did you play a young black woman?
Yes. And honestly, I thought they'd like that more. I thought that they'd appreciate the blackface. But it seemed to really, it's hard with the makeup because of the heat and the humidity. Just kind of fell right off me.
So, there's very little publicly available information about her childhood, except for that she dropped out of school in the sixth grade, which is pretty damn good for Leesburg, even these days.
I'm pretty certain the mayor didn't even graduate from elementary school. He was raised independently by just an entire church.
Marie spent her 20s getting into a lot of trouble. Forgery, assault, larceny, robbery, passing bad checks, whatever she could do to make a buck to support her family. The timeline's a little unclear, but Marie definitely had children from a previous relationship and would later say in an interview that she would do anything for her kids, anything but murder.
Mm.
Keep that in mind. It's very important. Mm. In the business, we call this foreshadowing. When she was 23, Marie was working as a maid in a motel, making 75 cents an hour. One day, while scrubbing the floors, Marie had an epiphany. She realized she could make more money simply by robbing the motel.
There's all this money that I'm not getting.
So she robbed her boss and then staged the scene to make it look like she had also been a victim, tying herself to a chair. It was the perfect crime, except for the fact that Marie had been chain smoking the entire time as she was waiting for the cops to show up. And when they questioned her how she could smoke all these cigarettes with her hands tied up, she realized her master plan had been foiled and she confessed. Now, look, I should mention here that in order to fully enjoy the Marie Dean Arrington experiment, you're going to have to suspend your disbelief a little bit. A lot of the info on Marie comes from Marie herself, given in jailhouse interviews. And if Marie's criminal history tells us one thing, it's that she's a habitual liar who cannot be trusted.
Yeah.
So if you're going to sit there and ask, well, how could she tie both of her hands to the chair? How'd the cops know they were her cigarettes? I can't help you. All of these anecdotes could be bullshit because they're coming from a notorious bullshitter. And I think that's kind of fun, actually. Yeah.
It is. I mean, it's even better. It's a window into the mind of this person and what they think other people will believe.
Yeah. So some parts of the story not up for debate, though, like the murder of Jack Arrington. In 1964, Jack was living the good life down in South Florida. He was a former police officer turned Miami nightclub bouncer, and he trained boxers on the side. You know, classic gentleman.
Classic South Florida gentleman.
Absolutely. That's a good job. Probably trained with Jake LaMotta. Who knows?
Oh, wow.
He also had a highly toxic marriage with Marie, who was fully in the midst of her brat summer. Earlier that year, she had been charged with larceny and vehicle theft, and she might have had her sights set on something bigger. According to one of the boxers Jack trained, Marie told him that she was going to kill Jack.
Ladies always tell you.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill that.
I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill you. They tell you before they do it.
About a month later, she did. On the 4th of July, 1964, Marie and Jack went to Bethune Beach. It was supposed to be a day of the three Fs, fun, fireworks, and frankfurters. But it turned tragic when Marie added in a fourth F, fucking murder.
Yeah.
Marie and Jack got into an argument in the car. It turned physical. Eyewitness Nathaniel Powers testified that he approached the car to break them up when he saw Jack choking her. The timeline of what happens next doesn't make total sense. But again, you can't let the truth get in the way of a good story. As it goes, Nathaniel Powers got shot in the leg. No idea who fired that shot or why. Also, Jack Arrington got shot. The shooter on that one, not up for debate, it was Marie. Mm. As for the motive, her lawyer claimed self-defense. Marie claimed it was an accident. Take your pick.
I think Marie might be a murderer.
At the time, she should have just went with self-defense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because the guy, Nathaniel Powers, said he saw Jack choking her.
Yeah. Yeah.
She could have done it.
Yeah.
She's just too honest.
At the time he was shot, Jack wasn't dead yet, but he was on his way. Marie left him there bleeding out and took off to her mother's home in Leesburg. The next day, she turned herself into police, confessed to killing Jack. Weird, though.
Yeah. Hey.
Marie was charged with manslaughter. The state didn't pursue murder charges because they couldn't locate the weapon. 47 years after the trial, Marie said in an interview that she'd snuck the gun into Jack's casket and had been buried alongside of him.
That's incredible.
The best detail I've heard in fucking months. It's so good.
The trial didn't last long, despite Marie's testimony that Jack had hit her and the account of Nathaniel Powers that Jack had been choking her. The claims of self-defense fell on deaf ears. The jury deliberated for 37 minutes, which I assume consisted of a half-hour lunch break, a six-minute recap of how good the lunch was, and then 1 minute for them all to agree that Marie was guilty. She was sentenced to 20 years in prison. Marie was going to spend 2 decades in the slammer, and there was no way out. Unless, of course, she could come up with $500.
What?
Yes. Marie appealed the conviction, and while the years-long appeals process was in motion, the judge decided to let her out on an appellate bond for a cool $500.
That's awesome.
Yeah, remember when I mentioned the cartoonish ineptitude earlier? This is the shit I was talking about.
This is actually the first time we're seeing someone show mercy.
Yeah. I mean, it could have been that, in these days, because we're talking the early 60s here, 64.
Yes.
Yeah. It's quite possible that, you know, she was a black woman facing an all-white jury.
Yeah.
And the judge may have had some sympathy and been like, okay, well, let's see what she does.
Yeah. You know, it makes sense to, like, at the time, too, there was like a whole thing about women don't really commit these crimes, too. Yeah. Like, the idea of, like, who knows with this? We'll let her out. She's not going to go do a bunch of other crimes if we let her out.
Yeah.
And women are weak.
You know, they let her out, and she was on her best behavior. Unfortunately, the same could not be said for a couple of her kids who were running afoul of the law. On July 6, 1967, 19-year-old Lloyd Dean and three of his friends set out to rob Eastern Oil gas station in Leesburg, Florida. The plan was simple. Lloyd and Eddie Daly would enter the station, rob the cashier at gunpoint, and two other boys would act as lookouts. Then the boys would split the millions of dollars and party forever. The cashier, Herman P. Lane, refused to give up the money. It was unclear which one of the boys had the gun, but they didn't have it for long because Herman P. Lane wrestled it away from them while screaming, "You done fucked with the wrong gas station cashier tonight, boys! Herman P. Lane ain't the one!"
Something like that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's the type of shit you scream when you're wrestling and gun away from a teenager.
I'm the one!
After Lane disarmed one robber and the other punched him in the head, the boys managed to get $40 and fled the area on foot. They were not caught, and the end result was a hard-earned pair of 20s to be split four ways.
Yep. $10 each.
Not
in,
enough.
1960s, even in 1967, $10 for armed robberies, not a lot.
Ain't the best, but, you know, you get a couple beers.
Yeah.
Well, It didn't pay for long, unfortunately. No. A short while later, Marie's 17-year-old daughter, Francina Dean, got arrested for passing bad checks at a Publix supermarket. Rookie mistake. Every Floridian knows good checks go to Publix, bad ones go to Winn-Dixie.
Yeah, because they check Publix checks. Yeah. That's good. You still know that.
While being questioned about the crime, Francina offered up information on the Eastern Oil robbery, giving police the name of Daly and Sean Brown, one of the lookouts. She admitted her brother Lloyd's name. As soon as Daly and Brown were brought in for questioning, they ratted on Lloyd Dean immediately.
Yeah.
He responded by blaming everything on them, saying he didn't partake in the robbery. He just showed up after it already happened, although he did admit to sharing in on the profits because when someone has a crisp Alexander Hamilton with your name on it, what are you going to do? Not take it?
Yeah, it's full $10.
Yeah. So both of Marie Dean Arrington's kids are now on trial, and things didn't go well for either of them. 17-year-old Francina was sentenced to 2 years in prison despite public defender Bob Pierce arguing that she was just a kid who was raised in a bad environment, a statement that I'm sure Marie was thrilled to hear.
I mean, let's just say Marie's not she's not a mom first.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, I like her, but I don't want to ever know her.
No. Yeah. I like the energy. Yeah.
Lloyd was also represented by Bob Pierce, and the results of his trial were freaking disastrous. Daly got 10 years probation, maybe a little harsh for a $40 robbery where no one got hurt, but pretty reasonable overall, no prison time. Brown was a minor, so he got sent to juvie detention. And then there's Lloyd, who got, I shit you not, life in prison.
Wow. Jesus.
For this fucking robbery. The judge was no doubt swayed by a pre-sentencing report that argued that Lloyd Dean was in danger of following in the footsteps of his criminal mother.
This is the shit. Shit like this still happens.
Yeah. More than ever.
Yeah, man. It included
legalized slavery.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man. It included testimony from his grandmother that said she tried to raise him right, but that Lloyd didn't know the difference between right and wrong, and she was hoping for a harsh sentence to teach him a lesson, that old shitty bitch that she was.
I think like 5 years is a harsh lesson.
One's fine.
You know, I think that's one is fine. Yeah. I think that's enough. Yeah. I think that would be enough.
One's all right.
Yeah.
Life in prison. Fuck me.
Yeah, Marie Dean Arrington was fucking pissed off about this situation. MDA was MAD. Her kids were both locked up with egregiously excessive penalties. She was getting dunked on left and right in court. Bob Pierce blamed her for Francina writing bad checks. Whoever wrote the pre-sentencing report used her as a way to advocate for Lloyd doing life behind bars. And so I ask you at this moment, what would you do? What would you do if you're Marie?
Murder?
Go up. Ape shit.
Bottom line, Marie was determined to get her money's worth out of that $500 appeals bond. She set out on a poorly planned revenge tour. Stop one was Bob Pierce's office. She felt that he had done a poor job defending her two kids, and she was going to let him know by killing his fuck ass. Problem is, Bob Pierce wasn't in the office that day. Turns out, sometimes lawyers are in court.
Yeah.
So Marie did the only logical thing. She kidnapped Bob's secretary, a woman named Vivian Ritter.
Can I just say, if you're going to do a bunch of murder, don't kidnap anybody. It's a fucking hassle.
It really is.
Yeah, and especially if you're going to murder, don't pivot to kidnapping.
No.
Yeah, you stick with the plan.
Come back. Murder the guy when he's there.
Just be like, oh, I was checking in and seeing, you know, how everything's been. Sorry about what happened to my children.
Yeah.
See you in a couple. When's Bob going to be back?
Yeah.
So Vivian's disappearance had Leesburg on edge. 2 days after her abduction, they found her car. The trunk was covered in blood. Police brought Marie in for questioning, but she had an alibi. At the time of the abduction, she said she was out fishing with her cousin Ellie. Cousin Ellie was all like, don't get me wrapped up in your bullshit, and denied the claim. Upon further questioning, Marie admitted that she had not been fishing on that fateful day and that she had gone to Bob Pierce's office. But while she was there, her and Vivian Ritter were both abducted. Good story. In her news story, the abductors drove both of them out to an orange grove and then decided to let Marie go, driving her back to Leesburg and saying that if she said anything, they'd kill her. Marie led police back to the orange grove where they would later find Vivian's body. Fuck! I bet that's where Nancy Guthrie is.
Nah, dude. Nah, she's in Jalisco way. I actually think she might be in Cabo, enjoying the rays of the sun and having margaritas.
God, just... how happy would you be if it was just finally a picture of her just sucking on a margarita?
Yeah, just her middle finger, just like, fuck all y'all. I hated my daughter too. You know, like that would be amazing. I'd love that for her, but that's not what happened.
I think we're going to find her in a small Eastern European village wearing a babushka.
Yeah, like a mustache. Yeah. And just being like, my name is Kugunko Burskorsky.
Yeah, no memory.
I don't know. Yeah. 90. And 90 is
and it's all
going to
match. All the genetics are going to match. All the testing is going to match. It's definitely, and everything's going to say it's going to be Nancy Guthrie.
No, I am Nonushka Mamonsky. No. I go to the war. I make sandwich for the Ukraine. Boys,
yeah.
Pay me with their loving. All the Ukraine boys come and fucking suck me after I make them soup and sandwich.
In a kinder world,
yeah.
That's Nancy Guthrie.
That's where we would be right now.
So after they found Vivian Ritter at the Orange Grove, they searched Marie's home and found all sorts of ransom notes saying that if her children were not released from jail, she would dismember Ritter and then send police body parts one by one. In the notes, she also threatened to kill the wife of Troy Hall, the judge who handed down Lloyd Dean's life sentence. She did not kill the judge's wife, although his house had been broken into a few days prior, but nobody was home. So old mean Marie instead decided to take a shit on his floor.
That's what I'd do.
Yeah, as George Clinton would say, she got that dog in her.
That's a naughty dog.
But so she wrote all these notes but never sent any of them?
No.
Nah.
She didn't. Their follow-through wasn't the
bad
best.
Follow-through.
She's
yeah.
just not a super type A.
No.
So unsurprisingly, Marie's second trial didn't go much better than her first. Despite eyewitness testimony that seemed to support Marie's theory of a third abductor and a handwriting expert saying that he couldn't link the notes to Marie, she was found guilty after the all-white jury deliberated for a few hours. On December 6, 1968, she was sentenced to death by electric chair. Marie was sent to Lowell Correctional Facility, remember that place,
mm-hmm.
to await death. Despite pleas from the prosecutor that she was very dangerous and needed to be in a maximum security environment, she was placed in a minimum security hospital room. Cartoonish ineptitude strikes again. So what's she supposed to do now? Not escape?
Yeah.
You obviously don't know Marie Dean Arrington, my friend. As far as prison escapes go, though, this wasn't exactly Shawshank Redemption. She simply lit some matches and melted the screen window enough so she could break through it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you heard that right. She had a screen window.
And it's not even a metal screen
That's
window.
That's amazing.
Not even an aluminum screen window.
Yeah, it's great for keeping out skeeters, but bad for keeping in mean Maries, I'll tell you that much. She rolled up some blankets to look like a sleeping body. Then she ran, hopped over a couple barbed wire fences, and was gone. All in all, it was a prison escape that was easier than your average American Ninja Warrior course.
Far easier.
Cops showed up with bloodhounds hours later and found nothing. It was like she flew out of here, the prison superintendent exclaimed like a total dumbass. And just like that, Marie Dean Arrington was on the lam. The public defender and the judge were on high alert, thinking that she'd come back to finish the job. But she
didn't. Like Jason Voorhees.
Yeah. She stayed gone, somehow getting to New Orleans and starting a new life as a diner waitress named Lola Nero.
Now that's a fucking assumed name. That's
I
a
really is.
Assumed name.
Anyone's like, my name's Lola Nero, it's like, that's not your name.
You're whatever, okay? What are you running from?
Yeah. If it is their name, though, they do have to call every man Big Boy.
Yeah. Hey,
that
dude.
Hey, that big boy. Big name's ball. Lola Nero.
He wants some grits.
Especially like 68 New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
Well, she kept tabs on the search for Marie Dean Arrington and took a sense of pride when the FBI made her the second woman ever on their most wanted list. She also mailed some threatening materials to the judge, but otherwise kept her nose clean. Her daughter, Francina, got out of prison. Her initial 2-year sentence was extended after they tacked on an additional charges for, get this, attempting to escape.
Yep.
Marie was sure that any day she was going to get caught, but lasted for 3 years before the feds finally tracked her down. She was brought back to Florida and given an additional 10 years on top of her death sentence. But about that death sentence, it never happened. Turns out, Marie had unwittingly saved her life.
That's awesome.
Because shortly after she was put back on death row, the landmark case of Furman versus Georgia ruled that the death penalty was unconstitutional and invalidated the death sentences of nearly 700 people nationwide, including Mean Marie. Her sentence was changed to life in prison plus 10 years, even after Florida became the first state to institute a new death penalty that met more rigorous requirements set forth in the Furman case. They couldn't go back and retroactively give the death penalty to any Floridians in the original 700. So instead of getting the chair at 40 years old, Marie died of natural causes at 80, like a friggin' champ.
She beat the state of Florida.
She really did. Not many people do. I mean, she still died in prison.
Yeah. But she didn't die in the chair.
That's right. So before we wrap up, I don't want to. Hey, I got to jump back in the Bummerville for 2 seconds, which could be an alternate name for Ocala.
Bummerville, Florida. Bummerville.
But currently, Ron DeSantis is on an execution tear. In 2025, Florida executed 19 people, which is more than any year in the state's history, and 40% of the entire nation's executions. Florida uses a system where the governor decides who is executed and when based on a criteria that isn't public. The state is currently on pace to repeat last year's numbers. Also, the laws were recently changed that capital punishment no longer has to be a unanimous decision by the jury, and a death sentence can be given to someone with a vote of 8-4. Fucking nuts.
Yeah.
It can be assumed that our dumpy governor is doing this because he's about to term out and wants to kill as many people as possible so he could run for president again on his usual tough-on-crime platform. Fuck you, Ronnie. That's the end of this.
Yeah, fuck him.
And I did find out who the first woman on the top 10 most wanted list was. Ruth Eisman Scheer.
Oh.
I'd never heard of her before. But the reason why those other women were not on the list, except for maybe, I think, Caroline Fugit, is that the most wanted list was not created until 1950.
Bonnie Parker.
Actually, I think when Bonnie Parker was going and Ma Barker, I don't think the FBI was even officially I don't think the FBI was officially established at that point in history.
Really?
I don't think so. I can't remember. I can't remember. I think Bonnie and Clyde helped to create the FBI. Like it led to the creation of the FBI.
Oh, the Highwaymen.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Highwaymen.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we go.
Incredibly mediocre movie.
Oh, it was supposed to be so good.
It was Woody Harrelson, fucking Kevin Costner chasing Bonnie and Clyde. It's like, this is gonna be awesome. I've never seen a movie that I could describe as aggressively mediocre.
Yeah, it really was. You know what's good though? A Perfect World.
Perfect World's great.
It is a good movie.
And that was actually filmed right around where I grew up. It was filmed in a town called Aspermont. Mm. And we have listeners out in Aspermont. So hey to all you Aspermonter. All you Aspermont Hornets out there, come out!
But I think that Kevin Costner is best in Dances of Wolves. That's his best, boring, best performance. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's incredible.
That's when his boring was really good for the movie.
I just always hate that movie because it beat Goodfellas.
Yeah,
which it's not Goodfellas.
It's fine. Martin Scorsese doesn't need all these Oscars. He has us.
You're right.
Well, you did get Oscars eventually. But really good job, Eddie.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you.
Yeah, shout out to Pat Barker for helping me write this, man.
Freaking really good. Welcome. And you can go see us talk about this ad-free on our patreon.com/lastpodcastonleft. You can listen to our show ad-free. You're going to see Movie Stories, the new show with Ed and I, over there. You can also see Last Stream on the Left live every Tuesday, 5 p.m. PST.
And don't forget to watch us on Netflix.
Yeah.
If you like to watch podcasts, that is.
Yeah. You like to watch.
Ooh, you dirty, dirty, dirty. Also, we're on the road. Well, Last Podcast on the Left isn't on the road for a while, but Henry and I are going to hit the road again soon, and I'm on the road. Go to eddietunes.com to find out if I'm coming to a place near you.
Go check out lastpodcastontheleft.com for all of our live show tickets. And also, it's still live. Our last ever, JK Ultra, is still rentable over on lpotl.kiswe.com. That is lpotl.kiswe.com. Go check it out. We're still there. Yeah. And honestly, it was a great show, and I already miss it.
Yeah. And if you cannot write down that... strangely spelled Earl.
Kiss me.
Well, because you're driving. Yep. Just go check out our Instagram at LP on the left, and you'll find a link there.
Yeah. Oh, I almost forgot. If you're in LA on August 16th, I'm going to be doing Dead Men Tell Some Tales again. This is probably going to be the last time we do it. And we're also going to live stream that. So that's
cool.
That's going to be at Dynasty Typewriter. So get on out there. Come say hi to us. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Is it?
Should I say I'm going to be there or no?
Yeah, you're going to be there.
I'm going to be there.
Yeah, Henry's going to be there. We're going to have some fun. I also got a couple other special guests lined up. It's going to be a fucking blast. I love this show.
All right, fuckers. Good work.
Yeah, good work for you guys, too.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hail Satan, still.
Hail Gene, I guess, still.
Yeah. Hail Mean Marie.
Yeah.
Why not?
She's a murderer, but it's
fucking
good.
She's a double murderer. She's not a good person, but...
She's fun.
Phenomenal story.
Yeah. She's a fun lady.